Words will now be recorded.
Okay, thank you everyone for coming. So we're still continuing our theme of medical topics. So I would like to go through some of the sugyas and some of the sources about how pikuach nefesh, if there's a risk, a threat to life, how it overrides the Shabbos and how it overrides other Isurim as well. And we're actually going to see that there could be a fundamental difference between Shabbos and other Isurim. That will be the Shita of Rabbeinu Meir from Rottenburg, the Maram Meir Rottenburg. So we're gonna look into some of the interesting background of Pikuach Nefesh. A Gemara that we're all familiar with, the Gemara in Yuma, that Pehei Yomid Aleph, and it takes us over to Pehei Yomid Beis, a very famous Gemara. The Gemara wants to know, how do we know that Pikuach Nefesh is that we have to look out to save somebody's life. From where do we know that Pikuach Nefesh, that a threat to life, a medical emergency, is Doicha Shabbos, overrides the Shabbos? So the Gemara gives us various sources until the Gemara finally settles on the one that we're all familiar with. So first the Gemara says, Machteres. So Machteres is the halacha that if a burglar is breaking into someone's home, so we're allowed to hold our ground and we're allowed to kill him when he's breaking in. And the Gemara says the reason is because the assumption is that if the burglar already stoops so low that he's willing to break into my home, so obviously he's prepared to kill the homeowner if the homeowner stands up to protect his property. So we can assume the person coming in is coming in as a threat to life. So the Gemara says, if we can override the Aveira of Ritzicha, of murder, if we're allowed to kill somebody to save a life, so certainly we can override the Shabbos to save a life. That's one of the sources that we have, that we can override Shabbos to save a life. Another source the Gemara cites is Bris Mila. If you're allowed to perform a Bris Mila on the eighth day on Shabbos in order to fix, so to speak, to be misaken one limb of the baby's body. So Kal v'chomer, certainly you're allowed to override the Shabbos to save the entire person. That's the second source the Gemara says. The Gemara brings a few different limudim of this nature. Rav Shimon ben Menasya comes along and says, v'shomru b'nei Yisrael sa'shabos. So this is the famous pasuk. V'shomru b'nei Yisrael sa'shabos. Klal Yisrael should guard the Shabbos. La'asois es ha'shabos v'doiroi sam. In order to observe the Shabbos for future generations. So this is a well-known idea. So says the Gemara of Shimon ben Menasya, Amra Torah, Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas, Kedei Sheyishmor Shabbosois Harbe. So it's a drasha. So what does the pasuk mean when it says, Bishamru b'nei Yisrael Shabbos, Klal Yisrael should guard the Shabbos, La'asois es ha'Shabbos Adoroisam, in order to perform the Shabbos for all generations. So Rav Shimon ben Menasya says, what it means is, that Klal Yisrael, Bishamru b'nei Yisrael as a Shabbos, Klal Yisrael should guard this Shabbos. We should do what we're supposed to do on this Shabbos in order that we can keep future Shabbosos. Amru Torah, the Torah is giving us permission. Chalel alav Shabbos achas. We have to even violate this Shabbos, Kedei sheyishmor Shabbosos harbei, in order that we should be able to keep all future Shabbosos. Guard this Shabbos, in other words, act smart regarding this Shabbos in order to facilitate keeping future Shabbosos. So if a person has a risk to life, the idea is that we should keep this Shabbos. In other words, we should actually be smart and violate this Shabbos in order to be able to keep future Shabbosos. Rabbi Yehuda Omra Shmuel comes along. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omra Shmuel is an Amora. So it's a fascinating Gemara that an Amora weighs into the Tanoim, and he says, I havoi hasam, had I been there, Hava amina di dia difa midithu. I would have said that my reason is better than the reasons that are cited by the Tanoim. It's a bold statement. It's very unusual for an Amora to say such a thing. And this is also a famous drasha. V'chai bohem. The pasuk says in Parshas Achrei Mois, v'chai bohem, we should live through the commandments. V'loy sheyamus bohem, we shouldn't die through the commandments. So the majority of the commandments, we override them when there's a risk to life. Amar Rava, Rava says, Lekulu Islehu Pircha, all of the drushes that were given by the early Tanoim can all be refuted. Bar Midishmuel, the Lesle Pircha, with the exception of Shmuel, the Amora, his drusha, we cannot refute. Why? The Kulu Ashkechon Vaday Doicha, because all of the examples that the Tanoim gave from the drushes, let's take the example that we're going to work with later on in our discussion, that the Torah says you should violate this Shabbos in order to keep the future Shabbos. Perhaps that Pasuk is only speaking about when it's a Vaday, when there's a definitive risk to life. But who says a Suffolk, who says that a doubtful case, we don't even know if this will save the person's life, or we don't even know if the person is still alive, we wouldn't be able to derive from that pasuk that we can override the Shabbos. However, Shmuel's drasha doesn't have a pircha, because Shmuel's drasha says that the mitzvahs simply don't require you to give up your life, even misafik, because we have to be able to definitively live by the mitzvahs, and therefore that pasuk would teach us that even safik bikuach nefesh could override a mitzvah. Amar Avina, the Yisema Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So the Gemara concludes, Tava Chada Palpalta Harifa, one sharp pepper is better than a malat sana de kari, is better than a whole basket full of cucumbers. So the Gemara gives a parable, that must have been a common expression back then, that Shmuel's drasha is sharper than all the previous drushas of the Tanoim. It's an astounding Gemara, because we never have such a thing that an Amora came up with a better pshat than the Tanoim. And we're going to see in the duration of the shir that we can perhaps salvage the Tanoim in our example, and it's not going to come out the way it seems. Okay. Now, in item Bays, so we'll
Robert,
yes, go ahead.
Robert, sir.
Yeah.
Why Brit Milah is in Pikuach Nefesh?
It's not Pikuach Nefesh. The Gemara's wording there is that if to fix one Aver you can override Shabbos, then you can certainly override Shabbos to fix the entire Guf. That's the Gemara's. It's a Kal V'Chomer from Bris Mila. If the Torah gives us permission to be Misakin an Aver, so then Kal V'Chomer we can be Misakin the entire Guf. That's how the Gemara puts it over there. Not that Bris Mila is Pikuach Nefesh, but the Torah allows us to be Doicha Shabbos even to fix one Aver, Kal V'Chomer the entire Guf. Now we know.
Does the Torah give us rishos, or do we have a chiyuv?
Oh, very good. So we're actually going to talk about that. Very good. We're going to talk about
rishos.
Yeah. So now, not that's very good. Deish, go ahead. We're going to talk. We're going to get more into that. Now, not only is this Shabbos, do we override Shabbos for pikuach nefesh, but we know that we override any iser, virtually any iser for pikuach nefesh, like machalas asurais. If a person has to eat, if his only refuah is to eat something forbidden, so the person is allowed to eat something that would otherwise be forbidden in order to save a life. The Gemara in Yuma says the following, Misha achsu bulnis, somebody who had a disease called bulnis, machilinoi sayafilu dvarim tmeim, the person is allowed to eat even food that's tamei, that's the expression for non-kosher food. We once learned this together. We talked about eating the liver of a dog. We talked about different things that the Gemara says over there. Ad she'uru einav, until light returns to his eyes. I thought it was interesting that the Gemara says, Tan rabbanan minayin hayu yoidim she'eru einav. How do we know the person is out of the red, so to speak? Mishiyavchin ben toiv l'ra, omar abaya ubitayma. That when the person gains back his sense of taste and smell. So this bulness was some kind of a disease that would knock out the person's sense of taste and smell. It was considered a life-threatening disease. So you can override, you can violate the isurim, you can eat even a non-kosher food if necessary, until the person restores his taste and smell. That was the particular disease over there. Now, Tana Rabbah, we learned in a braisa, Misha achsu bulness, if the person has this disease, and he has to quickly eat, it's urgent, and we're feeding him in order to nurse him back to health. So, machilin oso hakal hakal. This is again, Nakamura and Yuman daf pe gimel. We feed him, we try to minimize the prohibitions, and we feed him the lesser of the prohibitions. If we have a chance, and we have a choice between something that's very forbidden, or something that's less, relatively less severe, so we're obligated to feed him the less severe prohibition, and postpone feeding him the more severe prohibition. And the Gemara gives us an example. Tevel unevela. Tevel is untithed produce. versus nevela. Nevela is non-kosher meat, unslaughtered meat. So the Gemara says, machilin oisai nevela. So unslaughtered meat is relatively speaking less severe than tevel, because tevel carries with it a misa bidei shemaim. If a person has produce from Eretz Yisrael that are chayiv in truma and meiser midoraisa, if the person neglects to separate the truma and the meiser and he eats the tevel, the untithed produce, so he's chayiv misa bidei shemaim. Nevela, relatively speaking, is merely a negative commandment. So if the person is sick and he needs to eat, the halacha is that we try to avoid the more severe prohibition. Hi, Bob. Thanks for joining. And we say that the prohibition of nevela takes precedence because we're supposed to go step by step. Let's see if we can get him out of the woods with the less severe prohibition before we have to just feed him, serve him the more severe prohibition. And the same thing applies to tevel u'shvias. If the person has untithed produce versus shmita produce that's already past the time of biur, where according to some of Farshim, you're not even allowed to eat it anymore. The halacha is shvius. The halacha is that will override the halachas associated with the shmita rather than sheper, rather than start up with the laws of tevel, because tevel, again, is a much more severe avera because it carries with it a penalty, a death penalty from a heavenly death penalty. So we see from this Gemara here that although pikuach nefesh is doicha shari surim, pikuach nefesh overrides prohibitions, it's still incumbent upon us that we have to minimize the prohibition and try to avoid the more severe prohibitions as best we can. So we first feed him the lesser prohibition and then we feed him the more severe prohibition. The Rush in Yuma brings a famous question in the name of the Ravid. So this is a Rush in Meseches Yuma, the 8th Perek, Simen Yud Dalet, the Zelah Shoinai. So here's a quote from the Rush in Meseches Yuma. They asked the Ravid, Choyla sheish by sakana, if you have a person who's a choyla, who's in a life-threatening situation, in lo yoichal basar, he needs to eat meat. Im yesh lefan of nevela, if we have nevela, we have an animal that wasn't shechted, we have non-kosher meat, ve'ein shochet, and we don't have slaughtered meat, so what should we do? Should we violate the Shabbos and shecht an animal in order to serve the person kosher meat? Or should we avoid being mechal the Shabbos and serve the person the non-kosher meat? So that's the question that the Ravid said. Should we violate the Shabbos, which is obviously a more severe violation? It carries with it an isur skila. It's a death penalty to violate the Shabbos deliberately. Or should we just merely feed the person the non-kosher food? So, kiyesh oimrim, the Ravid says, there are those who say, mutav shiyaver hu alav de nevela, it's better for the choyle to violate the relatively minor prohibition of eating non-kosher food, mishiyavru acherim ar iser skila, rather than someone violating Shabbos on his behalf, which carries with it an iser skila. It carries with it, had it been done deliberately without pikuach nefesh, it would carry with it a death penalty. So that would be the obvious halacha. And that's what we just saw in item bays, that when it comes to a list of non-kosher foods, we have to weigh our options and feed him the less severe of the two. So intuitively, when it came to Shabbos, one would think that we should feed him non-kosher food rather than committing the more severe avera on his behalf of violating the Shabbos. So the Ravid answered, "V'heshiv divrei yesh oimim mechuvanim heim." The Ravid says that what these people are saying makes a lot of sense, that intuitively we should rather feed the non-kosher than violate the Shabbos. Abul yesh loimar, but we could say, now the Ravid offers an interesting explanation, ki isr Shabbos kvar nitn ligdachas b'havara u'bibishol u'machamen loichamen. The Ravid has an interesting svara that anyway we're violating the Shabbos on his behalf. Chances are we have to heat up, we have to turn on the heat for him, we have to cook the food for him. So the Ravid says, ultimately, we're going to be violating Shabbos for him anyway. So one more violation of shechting is just going to ride on the coattails of the other Shabbos violations that we're anyway doing. So the Ravid says that, theoretically, if we look at it objectively, you're right. It would be better to feed him the non-kosher food than to violate the more severe violation of Shabbos. But the Ravid seems to be saying, since anyway we're violating the Shabbos on his behalf, So the extra shechita will just ride on the coattails of all the other violations that we're already doing in terms of the Shabbos. So one more violation of Shabbos is not going to make the difference. We're anyway violating, we're anyway taking the liberty to violate the Shabbos. So it would seem from the Ravid that the Ravid, in principle, agrees with the Yesh Mefarshim that had we not been violating Shabbos in the first place, if we would simply weigh a Shabbos violation against a relatively more minor violation, we should certainly avoid violating Shabbos and give him the non-kosher. It's only the right, it says, because anyway we have to violate the Shabbos, so one more violation is not going to make a difference. We're anyway accessing Pikuach Nefesh to violate the Shabbos. That's the Ravid's opinion. Now, this is the famous Shita of the Rabbeinu Meir Meirotenberg. And the Rush brings the Maram from Rotenberg. And the Maram from Rotenberg says something that it's an amazing idea, but it needs explanation, and we'll soon see why. Says the Ram Meirotenberg, Heshev b'kshuva al zeh. He wrote a kshuva regarding this question. Behevi dimyan. And the Maram Meirotenberg brings an analogy to our question. Oichel nefesh b'yamtif. So on yamtif we know that we're allowed to shecht, we're allowed to cook, we're allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov. So the Maram Meirotenberg wants to bring a question. He brings an analogy to this. We shecht on Yom Tov, we cook on Yom Tov. Now, Yom Tov, there's an aseh and a lois aseh. We're not allowed to violate Yom Tov. We have to keep the Yom Tov. We're bound by a positive commandment and a negative commandment not to violate the Yom Tov. So here goes the Maram Meirotenberg's question. Why do we permit a person to shecht on Yom Tov for Oichel Nefesh, where theoretically we're violating an aseh and a lois aseh with an isra malacha? Why don't we just feed the person on Yom Tov non-kosher food? Imagine sitting down at the Pesach Seder or sitting down in your sukkah, Shavuos, Zman Matan Teresenu, and we're going to eat non-kosher food. Why? Because why should we violate the Yom Tov, which carries an aseh and a lois aseh? Isn't it better not to violate the Yom Tov to shecht and to cook? And wouldn't it be better simply to eat non-kosher food, which is only one negative commandment, versus violating the Yom Tov? So this is the question, that this is like the rhetorical question that the Maram Meirotenberg poses. Why don't we ask a non-Jew to kill a bird, to kill the chicken for us? Because eating non-slaughtered chicken might only be an Issur D'Rabbanan, says the Maram Meirotenberg. Ein shechita la'oif min ha-Torah. So he's bringing this as a rhetorical question to bring out a point. So here's the answer that I'm sure we're all thinking of, that we're not obligated to eat non-kosher food on Yom Tov rather than shechting, because Ella, kiven the ha-Torah hetira lanu oichel nefesh b'Yom Tov, because the Torah permitted us to prepare food on Yom Tov. It's not as if we're overriding the Yom Tov out of duress. The Torah simply gave us a permit. Oichel nefesh is mutter on Yom Tov. So when it comes to cooking, it's as if there's no violation. How do we look at it? When a person cooks on Yom Tov, do we look at it that we're violating the Yom Tov because we need to eat? That's not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is that the Torah permits us to cook on Yom Tov. It's hutra. It's mutter. It's not an override. It simply was never usher in the first place. Yom Tov allows us to cook. It's not that it's Yom Tov standing in our way of cooking and we have to override the Yom Tov in order to cook. It's not dechuya. We're not pushing the Yom Tov aside. On the contrary, Yom Tov is hutra. It's mutter to cook. It's as if there's no prohibition whatsoever to cook on Yom Tov. If I cook on Yom Tov not for the purpose of eating on Yom Tov, for the purpose of eating tomorrow, that could possibly be a violation. But if I'm cooking for the purpose of Yom Tov, the Torah never prohibited me in the first place from cooking for the purpose of Yom Tov. That's called hutra. So I put in bold. So this is the analogy of the Maram Meirotenberg. Hachinami, kiven dehetira Torah pikuach nefesh. Since the Torah permitted pikuach nefesh, havikol malacha sho'isa b'shavis b'shtil choyla sheyesh b'isakana ki'ilu asa'a b'choyl. Anything you do on Shabbos on behalf of a person who has a threat to life, it's considered as if it's a weekday. That's the opinion of the Maram Meirotenberg. It's as if it's a weekday. So the Maram Meirotenberg explains, if in the Gemara in Yuma, when you had a toss-up between Tevel, which is a severe prohibition of a severe food prohibition versus a relatively minor prohibition of eating regular non-kosher food. So we have to go for the regular non-kosher food and avoid the more severe violation. But when it comes to Shabbos, says the Meiram Wittenberg, Shabbos is like Yom Tov. Just like you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Eichel Nefesh, so you're allowed to cook or shecht on Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. Just like Yom Tov is not usher in the first place when it comes to preparing food, so Shabbos is not usher in the first place when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh. So that's the beautiful idea of the Meiram Wittenberg, that when it comes to Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh is not an override for the Shabbos. Rather, Shabbos was never usher in terms of Pikuach Nefesh in the first place. Now, I wrote down the question later. We're going to get to it. But it's very hard. It's a beautiful idea, but it's very hard to understand what the Meiram Wittenberg is saying. Because the same way we say that Pikuach Nefesh permits us to do Malacha on Shabbos, so why wouldn't we say the same thing, that Pikuach Nefesh permits us to eat non-kosher if it's a risk to life? So just like when it comes to Shabbos, we don't weigh our options. We don't say that Shabbos is the more severe violation. Let's try to avoid the more severe and eat the non-kosher, which is less severe. We don't do that. We give a green light, and we permit the person to violate the Shabbos, which is a more severe prohibition. So why, when it comes to the choice of what we should eat, why do we say that we have to go for the less severe violation? What's the difference between violating Meichalas Asuris and between violating Shabbos? It needs an explanation, but this is the beautiful idea of the Meiram Wittenberg. Now, this halacha is paskined in the Tur, Simin Chin Chaf Ches, and it's also brought in Shulchan Aruch. I quoted the Tur, and the Tur quotes the words of the Meiram Wittenberg. Look how the Tur paskins. Hayacholet Tzarech Lebasar, this is item Hay. If the Chayla requires meat, we shecht for him. Do not feed him non-kosher food in order to avoid violating the Shabbos. Don't do that. Why? Because vis-a-vis the chole, Shabbos is a weekday. It's a green light. Don't try to avoid. It's not necessary to avoid violating the Shabbos in order to give the less severe prohibition. No, Shabbos is a green light. When it comes to a chola, it's as if it's a weekday. Forget about Shabbos. Shecht for the chola. When it comes to the nevel, the non-kosher food, do not give him the non-kosher food. It's preferable to violate the Shabbos than to give him the non-kosher food. Whatever he needs on Shabbos, and we shouldn't feed him the nevela, the non-kosher food. Again, it's very hard to understand the Meiram Wittenberg. What's the difference between our right to violate Shabbos and our right to violate eating non-kosher food? If we say that everything is a green light, nothing stands in the way of saving the chola, but don't we have to avoid the prohibitions, the more severe prohibitions, just like the Gemara in Yuma tells us that we have to feed him the vela instead of feeding him tevel? So why don't we say the same thing when it comes to the severe violation of Shabbos versus the relatively less severe violation of Nevela? We should also go for the lesser violation than the greater violation, just like the Gemara tells us we're required to do when it comes to a choice between different types of non-kosher foods. What's the difference between Shabbos and the other prohibitions? The Beis Yosef there brings a Chubas HaRashba, Chelek Aleph, Simen Taf Resh Pei Tes. And this is a quote now from that Chubas HaRashba. Says the Chubas HaRashba, V'lin Nereh. So the Rashba brings the Meiram Wittenberg, and the Rashba says, to me it would appear, Shehakol Tali B'machlokes, that this question, the Meiram Wittenberg's perspective, should really depend on a fundamental question. Em Nemar Shabbos Dechuyehi Eitzel Choyla. So this is the expression of the Poskim. How do we look at the heter to violate Shabbos to save a life? Is it Dechuya? Is it an override? Do we look at it like it's Shabbos, and it's an Aveira to cook or to shecht, but we have the right to do the Aveira anyway because saving a life is more important than the Aveira of Shabbos. That's what Dechuya means. Dechuya means that we still view it as an Aveira, but in this case, there's a mitzvah to do the Aveira because Pikuach Nefesh is more important. So it's an Aveira on the one hand. It is an act of violating the Shabbos, but we're obligated to violate the Shabbos in order to save a life. That's Dechuya. We push aside the Shabbos. Or do we say that it's hutra? Or do we say, or do we, right, so that's the question. So we're saying that it's better to shech on Shabbos, according to the Rami Rutenberg, than to feed him the Nevela. We're not, unless, of course, my father's pointing out, maybe this is what you mean, if the time it's going to take to go procure an animal and shecht is going to compromise the choyla's health, then obviously we have to feed him the nevel. The Rami Rutenberg is weighing, when all other considerations are equal, he's weighing the prohibition of nevela versus the prohibition of Shabbos. And as astounding as it is, he prefers violating the more severe violation of Shabbos rather than going for the relatively minor violation of eating non-kosher. The Rashba says that this would depend on how we view the override of Shabbos. Is it an Avera, but we push aside the Avera for the sake of saving a life? Or is it Hutra? Hutra means that it's as if it's not Shabbos, which is actually what the Maram de Rutenberg says. So the Rashba says it depends how we look at it. What is the nature of the heter to violate Shabbos to save a chayla? Is it dechuya? Are we pushing Shabbos aside, but it's still recognized as an avera? It's just that we're allowed and that we're required to do so. Or do we look at it like it's not an avera at all, and we compare the Shabbos to Yom Tov, like the Maram de Rutenberg does? If you say it's hutra, says the Rashba, we shecht. But if you say, shall I ask for Torah malacha b'Shabbos, ain't lo chayla? Because the Torah never meant to forbid malacha when it comes to a chayla. B'shechten l'chayla b'Shabbos, k'derech sheshechten anol atzmeinu b'yomtif. And the Rashba brings the analogy of the Maram de Rutenberg, just like we would shecht or cook on yomtif without any qualms, so we would also shecht on Shabbos for a chayla without thinking twice. Avalamanda omar d'chu yehi, but if you say that it overrides the Shabbos, it's recognized as an Avera. It's just like an Aseh is Doicha Alois Aseh. It's just that the consideration of Pikuach Nefesh is stronger than the consideration of keeping Shabbos. But we're violating the Shabbos. So then, Machil Aloi Nevela, then we should feed him the non-kosher food, because that's a lesser violation than violating the more severe violation, the death penalty of Shabbos. Ein anu oirim lishchoy, we're not going to violate shechting. The Rashba argues on the Rami Rutenberg, and the Rashba says, "Kimiduma li, it appears to me, shehi halacha dechuya v'loy hutra." The Rashba argues on the Rami Rutenberg, I don't think that Shabbos is permitted. I don't think that it's as if to say that regarding the chayla, it's as if it's not Shabbos. I don't look at it that way. I look at it that it is Shabbos, says the Rashba. It's just that the consideration of saving a life is more important than the consideration of keeping the Shabbos. But if we have the option of a lesser violation, says the Rashba, you should certainly feed him the meat rather than violating the Shabbos. The Ravid had a different idea. You're violating Shabbos anyway. The Rashba is not addressing that consideration. The Rashba is just simply weighing the two violations, feeding non-kosher versus violating the Shabbos. The Rashba says, how in the world can you violate Shabbos, which carries with it a death penalty, if Nevela is a more minor transgression? So says the Rashba, the only way would be to compare Shabbos to Yom Tov, that it's as if it was never forbidden in the first place to shecht on Shabbos for a chayla. I don't think that's the way it works. I think that the nature of the halacha is that the mitzvah of saving a life takes precedence over the Shabbos. But if you can do both, if you can save the life and also keep the Shabbos, then you have to avoid violating Shabbos and perform the lesser of the transgressions. That is the Rashba's opinion. So we have already a machlekes between the Meiram, Meirutenberg, and the Rashba. And the Rashba capsulizes for us what the crux of the issue is, how we look at the nature of overriding Shabbos. We still have our question that in the world of the Maram Rutenberg, why would Shabbos be worth differently than the list, the options of non-kosher foods that are available, that we have to certainly look for the less severe violation. We'll get to that. Now, the Beis Yosef continues. Now, the Beis Yosef has a fascinating analogy. The halach, it's also a Gemara in Yuma, on Davav in Yuma. The Gemara says, we all know, we learn it from the Korban Pesach, and we learn it from other psukim, that when it comes to bringing a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen is not allowed to be Tameh. If the Kohen is Tameh, he has to recuse himself and allow somebody else to bring the carbon. However, says the Gemara, if there's no one else to bring the carbon, so Tumah is, for a carbon tzibor, the Kohen is allowed to bring the carbon even if he's tamei. So if we don't have an option, the Kohen can bring the carbon. Imagine if in the times of the Beis Hamikdash we would bring the carbon tamei twice a day. Imagine if the Kohen is tamei and there's no one else to do it. So you're allowed to bring a carbon tzibor bitum. And there's actually a similar machlokes there in Yuma, what the nature of this override is. One man de omra says, tuma is the chuya bitzibor. That means that it's tamei. You really shouldn't be bringing the offering if you're tamei, but we don't have a choice. So the mitzvah to bring the communal sacrifice overrides the prohibition of entering the Beis HaMikdash when you're tamei and offering the korban when you're tamei. The other opinion says that tuma is hutra bitzibor, that it's a green light, it's mutter. So the Gemara tells us the difference is that if it's my family's, if it's the avoda was divided among the week, among the families of Kohanim, if it's your day to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, you're not required to go take someone from a different family where it's not his day in order to give up your chance to serve. If there's somebody within today's family who's Tahar, then everybody agrees, let the person who's Tahar do it. But you're not required to look further than the people who are on call for today. If they're all Tameh, we can bring the carbon. But if Tumah is only Dechuya, if it's an override, but it's not as if it's Mutter, then you would have to go fetch a Kohen from a different family and allow him to do it, and we would have to give up our chance for today and give the Kohen from a different family the right to do it. We'd have to give up and forego our chance. But if Tumah is Mutter when it's Betzibor, then we wouldn't have to give up our chance. We would be allowed to serve even though we're Tamei. So the Beis Yosef makes this far-fetched analogy, and the Beis Yosef draws a comparison. The Rambam Paskins in Hilchos Bias Mikdash, those are the laws of bringing karbanis, like the opinion that Tuma is Dechuya Betzibor. If we look at it as a last resort, just because the Torah allows us to carry on the communal offerings Betuma, it's only a last resort. But if we have an option of bringing someone who's Tahor, recruiting somebody who's Tahor, we're required to do that. So says the Beis Yosef, the Rambam is going to paskin the same way when it comes to Shabbos, like the Rashba, that Bikuach Nefesh is Doiche Shabbos, but it's not Hutra, it's not a green light. And in fact, that's actually what the Rambam says. The Rambam says in Hilchos Shabbos in Perek Beis, Dechuyehi Shabbos Eitzel Sakhanas Nefashos, like the Rashba. So basically, the Beis Yosef is bringing like a far-fetched analogy where we find a similar question. When the Torah allows us to do something, do we look at it like it's a green light, or do we look at it like it's a last resort? And the Beis Yosef draws this parallel that just like the Rambam Paskins, that Tuma, we only allow the Kohen to serve in a state of Tuma as a last resort, it's not a green light. The same thing would apply when it comes to saving the Chayla, it's a last resort, it's not a green light. And therefore, according to the Rambam and the Rashba, we would be required to look for a lesser violation. We're certainly required to save the person, but we would have to find ways to minimize the transgression because it's not a green light. It can only be violated as a last resort. We can't hesitate. We have to save the person. But if you can, on the spot, come up with a way to lessen the to mitigate the violation, you'd be required to do so. That's the Beis Yosef's opinion according to the Rambam and the Rashba. The Mirami Rutenberg says no. When it comes to Shabbos in particular, it's a green light, and you're not even required to think of a mitigating way to avoid violating the Shabbos. Go ahead, it's a green light, and we would prefer violating the Shabbos than even the lesser prohibition of feeding something non-kosher. So here's the question that we asked before in item Ches. We have to understand what's going on over here. Because doesn't the Gemara tell us when it comes to feeding the Chayla that we have to avoid the more severe violation? What's the difference? It's the same Pikuach Nefesh. Why is it that when it comes to the choice of foods, of preferred foods, we have to minimize the violation, but when it comes to Shabbos, we come up with this idea that Shabbos is a green light? Why should Pikuach Nefesh work differently vis-a-vis Shabbos than it does for other prohibitions according to the Merami Rutenberg? If it's Hutra, if it's a green light, then it should be a green light regarding food as well, the non-kosher foods as well. And if it's not a green light, if it's only a last resort, and that's why when it comes to food, we have to avoid the greater prohibition and look for the lesser prohibition, The same thing should apply to Shabbos, like the Rashba says and the Rambam say, that we have to avoid the graver violation and go for the lesser violation. There's another halacha brought in Shulchan Aruch, and it's based on a Magid Mishnah in the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch brings it, Shin Chav Ches, halacha Dalid. So it says like this, Makesh Shel Cholol Eino Tzricha Oimit. So back in the day, if a person had a Makesh Shel Cholol, a person had an internal injury, so the halacha is that we don't have to go to a doctor to assess, we automatically consider it to be a life-threatening situation. I believe that will be the case today as well, that if the person has some rachmon, or God forbid, some sort of internal bleeding or some sort of internal organ injury, we would immediately treat it as pikuach nefesh. We don't have to even ask a doctor. We don't have to think twice. It's automatically treated as a suffix pikuach nefesh. Even if there are no doctors there and the choyla is not requesting any care, now here's the lashon shchola. I put it in bold. Oisim like kol shuragilim lasis lebechol. So look how the Shulchan Aruch goes into overdrive. If a person is a pikuach nefesh, we perform for him whatever we would normally do during the week. And the Mishnah Berurah says, I quoted the Mishnah Berurah, it's mashma, afo pi she'ein bo sakana b'menias hadover hahu, even if that particular treatment would not be critical for the person's recovery, right? So what do we do when the person what do we do if Rachmana Litzlan, a person is in the ICU unit, he's in the hospital? So number one, we do all sorts of things. Obviously we want to save his life, but we also perform malacha to make him comfortable. We turn the light off if he needs to go to sleep. We turn up the heat a little bit. We visit him, we mechazik him, whatever he needs to do. We do all sorts of things as part of the care. In the hospital, they don't just do whatever the life-threatening procedure is. They do everything that he needs that they would normally do. The Shulchan Aruch says that on Shabbos, if we have a life-threatening situation, we should do whatever needs to be done, whatever we would normally do on an ordinary weekday. We don't have to weigh, is this critical? Is that not so critical? This could wait. This can't wait. We don't have to do that, says the Shulchan Aruch. We just treat it like a weekday when it comes to the Chayla. It's an amazing chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch. It comes from the Magid Mishnah, and the Mishnah Berurah says it that way. I quote it, Mashma, afo pi she'ein bo sakana b'menias hadavar hahu. Even if that particular therapy would not be critical, it's not going to make or break the person's recovery. Kiven she'achol yesh bo sakana. Once the person is labeled a chol yesh bo sakana, v'yesh b'hadavar tzerech tzas, even something that is minimally needed, it's something that's it's nice, but it's not critical. Or regilu masus le'bechol, it's something we ordinarily would do. Oisin gab Shabbos, we would do it on Shabbos as well. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Now, the Bir Halacha brings many Paiskim who disagree with this, and the Bir Halacha cites a whole list of, it's a very long Bir Halacha, he cites opinion after opinion who disagree vehemently with the Shulchan Aruch. Even the Mokum that we're being Mechalal Shabbos, we cannot violate the Shabbos for anything that's a non-essential therapy, a non-essential procedure for the chayla. The only time we can violate Shabbos for a chayla is if the withholding of that treatment would compromise the person's recovery and cause sakanas nefashis. But if you have something that is clearly not going to, it's neither here nor there in the overall recovery, it's just to make the chayla comfortable, right? It's not going to cause his sickness to worsen. Therefore, says the Bir Halacha, many poskim say that we're not allowed to do that, right? If it's clear, now the Bir Halacha is very careful to mention that if you have the slightest doubt that this treatment is critical, you have to do it. We're not coming to lessen safek pikuach nefesh. But if you know that something is non-essential, if you're sure it's only something that we would normally do routinely during the week, but it's not something that's essential or critical to his recovery, then you would not be allowed to do it on Shabbos if you know, if you're sure that it's not critical. If you have the slightest doubt, you have to do it anyway because of Sotei Pikuach Nefesh. The Nafka Mina is a very narrow Nafka Mina. The difference is very narrow. Something which we're sure is only a routine procedure, but it's not something that's critical. The Magid Mishnah and the Shulchan Aruch would permit it. Once the person is labeled a Chol Sheish by Sakana, it's a green light. And the other poiskim, a list of poiskim, say we have to weigh each procedure if it's considered pikuach nefesh or not. It's not just a green light. That's what the Bir Halacha says. The Bir Halacha says when it comes to a deraisa, we should be strict and adhere to the majority opinion that we have to weigh. We have to make sure that what we're about to do is at least might be essential, might be a suffix pikuach nefesh. But if it's clear to us that it's just a routine procedure, then we would not be allowed to violate the Shabbos through a malacha d'oraisa. A malacha d'rabbanan, says the Bir Halacha, we can rely on the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch even to do routine procedures if it's only an iser d'rabbanan. But if it's an iser d'oraisa, the Shulchan Aruch would permit even a routine procedure that's clearly not critical in the care of the chayla. But once he's a chayla sheish by sakana, the Shulchan Aruch and the Magen Mishnah permit us to do any routine procedure that we would normally do during the week. It's completely a green light. And the Bir Halacha brings many opinions that argue that when it comes to rabbinic violations, we can do whatever is routinely done. But when it comes to a biblical violation, we have to weigh, it has to at least might be necessary, has to be at least a suffix pikuach nefesh. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in the Koivitz Ha'aris in Yevamis, Simen Yud Ches, Ois Tes and Yud, so he brings a Tashbatz. The Tashbatz is an early Rishon. The Tashbatz said he's a Rishon, and the Tashbatz says, and this would really explain the Mirami Rutenberg, when it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos becomes mutter, like the Mirami Rutenberg says. Now, we asked the question, and here's the punchline. We asked the question on the Mirami Rutenberg, where is there a basis to differentiate between eating non-kosher food versus violating the Shabbos? It's the same heter of pikuach nefesh. So the Tashbatz gives us the insight, and that's why I brought in the introduction, the first item, I brought the Gemara in Yuma, because it's actually two different sources. One source is V'shamru b'nei Yisrael sa Shabbos. There is a pasuk that specifically permits a Shabbos violation for a chayla. And then we have the general mitzvah of v'chai bohem, which is an override on every prohibition, right? So we know, on the outside, it looks the same. Whenever there's a critical medical emergency, we can do any prohibition. We can violate Shabbos. We can feed a non-kosher food. But according to the Mirami Rutenberg explains the Tashbatz, we have to look a little bit deeper. When it comes to Shabbos, there's an explicit permit to violate the Shabbos. V'shamru b'nei Yisrael sa Shabbos, violate this Shabbos in order lasois es haShabbos l'dayroisam, in order to perform future Shabbos. There's an outright permit to violate Shabbos. But when it comes to other mitzvahs, it's under the general klal, the generic mitzvah of v'chai bohem. It's not an explicit permit on any specific mitzvah. It's a general mitzvah of v'chai bohem. We're not required to die from the mitzvahs. We're required to live through the mitzvahs. So that's a general permit to violate. So says the Tashbatz in explanation of the Mirami Rutenberg, Shabbos is a green light because there's an explicit pasuk that permits the Shabbos. Other prohibitions, it's only a last resort because of v'chai bohem. So that explains the contradiction between the Mirami Rutenberg and the Gemara in Yuma. When it comes to a list of preferred foods, we have options of forbidden foods where they're only permitted because of v'chai bohem. It's a last resort. We have to mitigate. We have to avoid the more severe prohibition. But when it comes to Shabbos, where there's an explicit permit to not keep this Shabbos in order to facilitate keeping future Shabbos, that's a green light, and we can even go ahead and shecht and violate the Shabbos rather than feeding him the non-kosher food. So explains Rabbi Chanan Wasserman that that's also the explanation of the Shulchan Aruch. Once the person is a chole, once the person is labeled a chole sheish by sakana, it's a green light, and you can do any routine procedure necessary according to the Mirami Rutenberg. But the Rashba, who said that not so fast, Shabbos is only dechuya, it's not kutra. That would be the opinion of the other poskim, that you can only violate the Shabbos as a last resort you can't violate the Shabbos as a green light, and you'd have to mitigate and you have to weigh what's necessary or possibly necessary versus what's clearly not necessary. So when it comes to other tzorchei chayla in item Yud Aleph, that's what it depends on. The Shulchan Aruch is going l'shitasa. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Meirami Rutenberg that Shabbos is like a weekday, and that's why you can do any routine procedure for the chayla sheish by sakana. But the Rashba and the other paskin would say, and the Rambam, that you have to weigh each time if you're allowed to do it, because it's not a green light, it's only a last resort. The Bir Halacha says that when it comes to a Doraisa, we should follow the Rashba's opinion, and we should not just routinely violate the Shabbos for a chola, sheish by sakana. We should have to weigh if it's necessary. And when it comes to the Rabbanans, we can rely on the Meirami Rutenberg, and we can just violate routinely any prohibition the Rabbanan for the chola, sheish by sakana. Now, what about the fact that we allow you to shecht on Shabbos? There are other reasons, like the Ravid's reason that we're violating Shabbos anyway, or that we're afraid the choyla will be more comfortable in order to be miyashiv his das, we can feed him the kosher food. So there will be other reasons to permit shechting, but we would not rely on the Meirami Rutenberg that it's simply a green light. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting halacha that another practical difference between whether we view Shabbos as a green light or whether we view Shabbos as just a last resort, if you have a doctor, should the doctor make himself available? Should the doctor go to the office and be sitting in the office all day on Shabbos because Shabbos is chutra, you're allowed to violate the Shabbos, it's a green light? Or should the doctor sort of try to arrange that there's a non-Jewish doctor to replace him? He should make himself less accessible on Shabbos. If it's necessary, obviously he should, but he should make himself less accessible. You know, that's why the doctor's phone number is not always listed in the phone book. A little bit less accessible that the doctor who's on call would take the calls. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, since most of the Poskim Paskin, that Shabbos is only dechuya, it's only as a last resort, so the doctor should sort of make himself a little bit less accessible and let the non-Jewish partner or associate be the one to be on call, and he shouldn't just make himself as if the Shabbos is a weekday. But had we paskin that Shabbos is chutra, Rav Moshe Feinstein would say that the doctor should literally make himself accessible, and he should be like the first one to take every call, because Shabbos is mutter. When it comes to a chayla, it's as if it's not Shabbos. But the Rav Moshe Feinstein says that most of the Poskim don't look at it that way, the Rashba, and that he should only violate the Shabbos if it's necessary. Otherwise, the non-Jewish, his partner, should be the one on call for the Shabbos. Okay, Yasha Koyach, everybody.
Quick question. Yes.